Now, this is some BS. This is some BS that we have to record under these circumstances. But damn it, I'm here to do a job. And to the best of my ability, I'm going to do it. And my co-host will as well. Welcome to episode 3 of the Saddle Up Show with Shad and Destin. I'm your host, Shad McGinnis. My co-host, Destin Adams. Destin, how are you feeling?
I mean, I feel like we felt pretty low after the tie. And not only did we lose to the Jaguars, we got it handed to us. And that's a rough one. It was rough. Like Shad said, it is never fun doing a podcast after a loss. But I will say, all the fiery questions and the fiery topics that we're going to get to talk about, I feel like this is going to be more fun to talk about than last week's tie, even after that butt kicking.
Fun, really. That's the adjective you're going to use, you know, to describe
These topics have more to talk about, therefore will produce more entertaining conversation. Therefore, I'm going to stick with fun. I'm not going to say it's a positive thing, but to have to talk about these things, but this will be more engaging conversation.
This definitely will be more compelling for the wrong reasons. I wish it wasn't as compelling. I wish it was pretty boring, you know, coming off a win, you know, something we was expected to do. But, you know, without further ado, I guess we can get into the questions because there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. And our very first question comes in from, let me see here, Sprain Dankle. His Twitter account is at School E Don't. And he has a very good question. Something I really wanted us to touch on. And it reads as, this team has invested serious money in several key areas, and yet they are getting dominated in said areas. That's the coaching term prep, overall vibe of the team, right? That's head coaching and GM when bringing in talent isn't enough. By the way, what Casey does to us may be felonious. For this particular question, Destin, before you get into exactly how you feel about it, I just want us to really focus on the general manager aspect of this question because we have questions about the head coach that's going to come later. So I would just like to tackle, this is pretty much our only Chris Ballard. Look at me rushing to get to Frank Wright. This is our only Chris Ballard-centric question. So I really wanted us to really concentrate on him when we take care of this one.
Yeah, I want to highlight that last sentence real quick just because it made me laugh when I read it when the tweet first came in. But yeah. By the way, what KC does to us may be felonious.
Quite a word, right?
I mean, felonious. It might be illegal in some states. I mean, if there aren't some things that improve, he might not be wrong. But, I mean, I think it's a fair critique. I mean, there is a lot of money put in some different areas that you don't see most top-tier teams do. The Colts have the highest-paid offensive line in football, and the current offensive line is on pace to allow 60 sacks this season through two games. And that's ridiculous.
You have to pause for dramatic effect.
Oh, that's just a crazy number, just even here. And it's coming from guys. I mean, the left tackle play has been poor in pass protection. But, I mean, everyone's going at Matt Pryor's head about it. I don't even think it's his fault. He's being thrown out there to play a position his skill set is not naturally fit for. And people wanted to get so mad at me for saying things about Matt Pryor during the preseason and training camp. But the biggest thing was always his skill set doesn't match the position. So I was never understanding why he was being trotted out there when Ryman is a guy who I believe is a better pass protector at a spot where you should optimize the pass protection element. So Matt Pryor, I don't blame Matt Pryor, but Matt Pryor's play at left tackle can't happen. Danny Pinter at right guard. They decided to let two guards walk this offseason, both of which that probably would be starting in place of Pinter. Chris Reed goes home to Minnesota, so hard to kind of tackle that one a little bit. And then Glowinski ends up going to the Giants. They didn't want to pay more to a right guard. I get it. After all the money they've put into this line, it would be hard to pay Glowinski. But they let those guys walk. They decided just to promote one of their own to Danny Pinter, moving him from center to guard again. playing a guy at a spot that's not his natural skill set fit. That's two of the five on the line that you're doing that to already, and neither spot are working out currently. Add those two to Braden Smith on the right tackle, Ryan Kelly at center, and just a lot of issues on the offensive line right now. I mean, Quentin Nelson's the new $80 million man, and I think he's played well, to be honest. I mean, it's hard to highlight Quentin Nelson when the offensive line's playing as poorly as it is, but on a win rate-wise, Quentin Nelson's doing Quentin Nelson things. Quentin Nelson is playing well. But the offensive line is the highest-paid offensive line in football, and they're on pace to give up 60 sacks again. And the other areas, I mean, the defensive line has a lot of money in it. Buckner, where you been? Yannick, where have you been? And Kwity-Paye had two sacks in the fourth quarter overtime area. But outside of that possession, because both sacks came on the same possession. Mm-hmm. Kwity-Paye, where you been? Dio's not getting a lot of snaps so far, but he's had some pressures. Grover has been phenomenal. I feel like it's hard to highlight the good players when this stuff's going on, but Grover has been phenomenal. But Ballard has prioritized those two areas. Both areas have been just flat out awful. And then you look at other key areas where the Colts haven't been spending money, where other top teams are. Receiver. We don't have any money at receiver. We saw that on Sunday. It's just hard to make it make sense when there's just so many different areas that are needed on this team, so many different areas where money is being placed, and you don't see other winning teams doing it. And it just becomes harder and harder to make excuses for a guy. I mean, I like Chris Ballard. I think Chris Ballard is good at what he does. I think Chris Ballard is a smart football mind. These are all positive things about the guy. But I think the guy is stubborn. I think the guy is in his own way at times. I think he believes his way of building a football team is the way to build the football team at times. And stubbornness in the National Football League, stubbornness in just about any job frame that you're going to be in life is a rough place to be, because eventually stuff's going to hit the fan and you got to be able to move. And we've talked about it last week. I'm just talking about it again. But Ballard, his seat's got to be super hot. I mean, I hear about Frank a lot, and we're going to talk about Frank, like Rashad said. But Chris's seat is on fire.
As far as what I have to say about that, I agree with you entirely about where the money and the resources is being allocated. I just want to take this moment to speak on Chris Ballard really quickly. Chris Ballard does some things well. He does have an eye for talent, and you can't deny the things that he's hit on. But I have a totally different philosophy. Not that it matters, because I don't get paid to build rosters. But I have a
philosophy on the way I feel like things should be done and the way that Chris Ballard is actually doing it. Chris Ballard believes he doesn't have to pour resources into a position like wide receiver or use first round picks on positions like that, because he just relies on Frank to scheme everything up. Well, Frank will make it easy on us. You know, we like our guys. Buzzwords like that. That kind of triggers me, because I catch the coach speak. Like I'm annoyed by it when you hear those guys getting these interviews after these type of games and they say things like this. But Chris Ballard believes in pouring money into the trenches. That's his philosophy. Offensive line, defensive line, you win the game in the trenches. And that has been the most disappointing part of this season thus far. The offensive line, the highest paid offensive line in the NFL, has failed you. Braden Smith has looked abysmal for the last year and a half, really, if we're being honest. Ryan Kelly has not looked like himself. You know, I know he suffered personal loss last season, and I respect that. You know, I accepted the fact that he was going through some things. You know, that's understandable totally. This year, he's just not getting it done. Matt Pryor is looking more and more like a mistake. We saw it with the Eric Fisher thing last year, you know, choosing Eric Fisher over Charles Leno, apparently. Defensive line, you invested all these resources, draft picks, money. You traded Rockets in a promising young corner who's ascending for Yannick Ngakoue. And while Yannick has been a great guy in the community, it just hasn't translated into the field. You know, to only pressure Trevor Lawrence three times and 30 dropbacks. That is crazy. That is insane. Trevor Lawrence, last two times playing us in Jacksonville, a guy that averages 58 percent on his completion percentage is averaging over 70%. He started off the last game 8-for-8 on his first drive. He started off this game 7-for-7 on his first drive. You're making things way too easy. Gus Bradley, we'll get to him later. I do have a couple of more things I want to say about him. But as far as Chris Ballard goes, you know, this is on your head because you built this roster and you hired these people in these positions. Frank Wright has a voice as far as who would he like on his staff, of course. But Chris Ballard, you're giving the go. You're green lighting these different things to happen. Carson Wentz wasn't your decision, but ultimately you green light it. You green lit it. You did. And you have to take some responsibility for the flaws that this roster had. You paid a guard. You made him the highest paid guard in the NFL, respectfully. You paid an off-ball linebacker. You made him the highest paid off-ball linebacker in the NFL, in NFL history, respectfully. You paid a right tackle. You gave him $72 million, respectfully. You paid Ryan Kelly, respectfully. These are all things that are not considered premium positions. And I know you say, well, your philosophy is if you play great, you get paid. I think it's time you start looking in the mirror and acknowledging some of your shortcomings as the general manager. And the biggest thing that I want to hit on really quickly before we leave off Chris Ballard is your free agent philosophy, man. It has to change. You know, if you're going to be around, I don't even know if you make it past this season, to be honest. But if you are around, it has to change. That stubbornness that Destin spoke on earlier, it has to go out the door. We're not telling you to build your foundation in free agency. We're just telling you that's a way to improve your roster. And you're ignoring it. Like, you're totally ignoring it. You're hindering this team that way. And you're putting us at a disadvantage.
Because you're one of the only teams that don't use free agency to upgrade your roster, or make the team better. I just don't get it. I don't understand it. And maybe by the time I do understand it, it'll be too late.
Now, Frank Reich, you might be sitting in your seat right now like, man, I got away with it this time. No. You guys blew up our voicemail box this week with so many Frank Reich questions. We only really had time to pick two of them, but I just feel like it was necessary to share that our voicemail box was full of Frank Reich questions and complaints. This first one comes from Ben.
Hey, Shot and Destin. My name is Ben McShane at TV Ben. That's TEEVEEBEN. I am in Los Angeles, but from Naptown originally. I've never had experience in a professional sports locker room, so I don't know what that feels like. And I'm wondering from a locker room perspective, if the Colts were to fire Frank Reich midseason, do they lose more than they gain? You know, he's someone who is a part of building this roster. This roster's not changing much. He was at the training camp. We don't have an offensive play caller to bump up. You know, what would firing Reich midseason do to make this roster produce more wins than it already is? Love the show. Thanks so much for opening up calls, and would love to hear what you have to say.
Man, that was a great question. Shout out to Ben, at TV Ben, I believe is his name on Twitter. And man, where do I start? If we fire Frank Reich mid-season, I don't think there's a really reliable way we can go, you know, doing that, making a decision just that impulsively, you know. I don't think he deserved to be fired today. You know, I'm not in that camp. I know there's a whole hashtag fire Frank Wright that's going on Twitter. I see you guys. You guys are tearing my mentions to shreds, telling me I better hang Frank Wright. And I plan to, but I don't think he should be fired. But if he was to be fired, most likely the replacement I would like to see is probably Bubba Ventrone. Just because I think he has the most upside out of any of the coaches that's already on the staff. And as a younger guy, I think that can potentially maybe get a head coaching job one day in the long run. You know, I just don't think Marcus Brady's there yet. John Fox, I know he's a consultant and he's a guy with head coaching experience. So maybe he's an option. I just think his ceiling's a bit capped with him. I think the same thing about Gus Bradley, you know, and if we're holding Frank's feet to fire, you know, a guy like Gus Bradley's not going to escape. You know, he's as responsible, as much as responsible for this as Frank is at this point. Yeah, I know we'll touch up on it later, but I'm just going through, you know, replaceable options. And it just seems like Bubba, a young guy, energetic, people play for him, had one of the best special teams units in the entire NFL last season. This year, he's actually getting the most out of a new punter. He's dealing with a new kicker. Bubba's proven over and over that he can be a good coach in this league. Maybe given more responsibility, he can step up to the occasion and prove that he's a solid guy. But what you would get mostly out of firing a guy midseason, firing Frank Wright to be exact, is you would get there's probably a lot of energy. You'll get them motivated. They'll play hard for 1 to 2 weeks. But then when that eventually subsides, you know, and you got to get into these matchups with these type of teams that we're playing this week, like the Chiefs, and you got to schematically get an offensive game plan together. I think that's where you'll feel the loss of Frank Wright the most, as far as his mental side and what he can come up with on the offensive side. I know none of you guys want to hear that coming off a shutout to Jacksonville, but when it comes to drawing up the first 15 plays and scheming together some things and taking advantage of different defenses, Frank Wright still does that well. And I'm not going to be a prisoner of the moment and ignore that. So I think that's where you were hurt the most is when you put yourself at a schematic disadvantage if you decide to fire Frank Wright impulsively right now. Let's just not forget it's week 3 coming up. We have no wins. We have one loss and we have one tie. So it very well can be at the end of this week, Tennessee's losing right now. At the end of this week, we can only be one game back of Jacksonville for the division. Let's not get too crazy.
I'm low-key upset because you stole my Bubba comments. Just full on. Full on what I wanted to talk about Bubba. We didn't talk about it before, so it's okay.
Right.
But I'll touch on the first question. Is there much positives? I just don't see a way you fire Reich midseason. I mean, if you get shut out again as the offensive mind, like there just has to be precautions taken eventually and punishments given down. Jim Irsay has been pretty anti making midseason moves, midseason coaching, midseason front office. You just don't see it. And we've been worse. Believe it or not, people, we have been worse. So to me, I just don't see it happening. Now, to just go off the other side, if it were to happen, the guy that I think I would want promoted to head coach interim-wise is Bubba Ventrone. And Rashad gave a lot of reasons why. For me, I think a lot of people have mentioned Marcus Brady as a young option, maybe up-and-coming offensive mind. You see what you got there, and maybe you have the head coach of the future. To me, as a guy who's never called plays in the NFL, he would already have to step into that role. So I would not want to put more on his plate. I would want Marcus Brady to be able to focus on that element that he's never done in the professional level. Let him focus on that, and we'll see where that goes. Gus Bradley, he's just in the doghouse for me right now, and I just don't see how you could promote him in this wake of things. So then there's just Bubba, who I think is very well respected in the locker room and across the league. I think he's a guy people would play for, like Rashad said. And I think he's the guy that if the reason you're going away from Reich is because you're not getting enough accountability in the locker room, and if you're not getting enough fieriness out of that spot, Bubba has the most of that energy on this staff. Bubba would be the guy who's willing to chew a guy out. I bet we would get way more media-liked sound bites out of a Bubba Ventrone type head coach. So if they were to go the route, I agree with Rashad that Bubba is the guy that I would go. I think Marcus Brady is intriguing, and if he takes over play calling and just blows it out of the water, he would be a huge head coaching candidate, whether here or elsewhere. I just don't think it's smart or good for him or us to throw more responsibilities on a guy who will already be doing a brand new thing.
Okay, man. So I see we agree. We're on the same page with Bubba Ventrone. We have another Frank Wright question too coming in, another voicemail that someone left us. This one is from my guy Ian. Okay, let's get into it.
Hey, Destin and Shaw, this is Ian. My Twitter handle is at NOGEGODA. I was just wondering, if Frank Reich does get fired this offseason, who do you think should replace him as the head coach? Thank you.
Ooh, this is a tough one. When this came in, I almost didn't want to use it.
Don't steal my answer, Destin.
When this came in, I almost didn't want to use it because it's just predictive, trying to pick the future up and coming head coaching candidates. Or maybe you go an older name who's been around and had success. But I'm going to go the up and coming route. The two names that kind of stand out to me from outside of the current Colts staff would be Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City and Byron Leftwich. I lean Leftwich. The reason being that he is now having to call the offense entirely himself. It was known that he was responsible for a lot of situational play calling, even when Arians was there. And for me, that attracts me more. Also, what better way to get over this Jacksonville hump than to hire a ex-Jacksonville Jaguar as your head coach? I mean, if this curse is real, and I didn't think I believed in curses, but man, oh man, the Jaguars are starting to make me feel like there's something real here. You got to cancel it out somehow. And I feel like Leftwich could do that, but also I think he's an up-and-coming offensive mind. I think he showed a lot of creativity with Brady, who has been still talented, don't get me wrong, but having an older, non-mobile quarterback and able to stay, keep your offense being creative. The run game has been very unbalanced at times and up and down. And they've just been able to keep the offense so creative in Tampa Bay that I would lean that direction over Bieniemy, who's been in the cycle multiple times now and has Andy Reid calling the plays there. So that would concern me, is if I'm going an offensive guy, I want a guy who has some play calling experience.
Organization of a team of an entire city.
Rashad, we can't do Jameis Winston yet, man. He's still quarterbacking.
I'm not going to pick. I can promise you one thing. I'm not going to pick Jameis Winston. I'm going to go with Sean Payton. Sean Payton, a guy that came to the city. For any of y'all that don't know, I live in New Orleans. He came to New Orleans in 2006, I believe. The hurricane that just happened in 2005, this city was in the dumps. They was looking for something to believe in. Sean Payton gave this place a facelift. You know, what he was able to do with Drew Brees, who a guy was a cast off from San Diego at the time, you know, was headed to Miami, and then things fell through. So he ended up going to New Orleans and lining up with Sean Payton, who was fresh off being an assistant head coach with the Cowboys and the quarterbacks coach, I believe, a couple of years prior. Nobody knew what to expect, you know, from Sean Payton. And he completely revolutionized the way the game is being called. The offensive. I know we have sour memories of Sean Payton for what he did us in the Super Bowl. It's fine. I didn't like it either. But it doesn't change the fact that what he can do with the offense, the way he can develop a quarterback. You know, if you're looking to draft a quarterback and get a young guy in here that's going to be a guy that's going to lead this franchise in the future, who better to groom that young guy and give him all of the knowledge that he's going to need to be successful at the next level than Sean Payton, you know, a guy that can scheme offense in his sleep. You know, I'm not talking about how great Frank Reich is as a schematic guy on offense. Sean Payton is top of the line. It doesn't get much better than Sean Payton. He's proven, has a proven track record. New Orleans had a top 10 offense, countless years over the past few years. He got Jameis Winston. He finally got fed up and decided to retire. Can't blame him. But he's a guy that deserves another chance. I absolutely don't think this is going to happen because I pretty much think his house is picked out in Dallas. His ranch is picked out. His horses is picked out. I have no faith that Sean Payton will come to Indianapolis, a place where we don't even know who's going to be the quarterback next year, even though Matt Ryan has a guaranteed contract on the table. But it's very well, he can retire right off into the sunset at the way this season is going. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Matt took his ball and went home 1 year, just like Phillip did. But Sean Payton would be my pick, my dream pick. But the other two guys that Destin mentioned are great options as well. I love Byron Leftwich. I love, who else is speaking? I'm sidetracked.
Eric Bieniemy.
Lincoln. Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy's guy that's been looked over for the last few years. It's almost to the point where people consider him, he may be blackballed. That's another story for another day. We'll discuss that later. But those are three guys that I would love to have, and hopefully we find a way to bring somebody into the fold that can just reshape the whole mindset of this organization right now, because it's looking pretty pathetic.
So real quick, just for all the people who are going to be mad in the comments, if you had to pick a defensive-minded guy to add to the list, who would it be?
Destin lobbed it, put it right by the rim. I'm going to windmill it. I'm going to go with Raheem Morris, man. If you guys seen the Super Bowl, you seen what Brandon Staley did with that Rams defense. I saw it firsthand. I actually saw Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips was there. My brother was hired. And then he was only there one season. And then Brandon Staley stepped in as defensive coordinator, completely changed the way that defense was playing. They decided to go more too high, more of the Vic Fangio style type of defense. My brother was allowed to run more of these different exotic over fronts. Just it's so schematically great, because you never know what guys are going to be at. That's the one thing that bothers me about the Gus Bradley defense. We keep alluding to Gus Bradley because we're dying to talk about him. But I would go with Raheem Morris, because what he has done with that defense, which is a huge part of why they were in the Super Bowl, the way he's used Jalen Ramsey, the way he used that star position, how you allow guys to move around. You can't get a feel for where anybody's going to be at on any given play. The simulated pressures, the ability just to be physical at the line of scrimmage is something our defense has been missing for years. And I would rather an offensive guy, a guy that can groom a young quarterback, but it would just be imperative to me that if we hire a guy like Raheem Morris, that he goes get to offensive mind to come here and be his offensive coordinator and just let that guy handle that side of the show. You know, let that guy run everything. He do his own thing, just kind of like what Ty Bowles and Byron Leftwich is doing with Tampa Bay. You know, Ty Bowles doesn't interfere with anything Byron Leftwich does on the offensive side. He lets him have that, and they run it as basically two separate entities, but their philosophies match. They're both aggressive guys. That's what you ask for if you hire in a defensive guy. You know, you want his mindset to match the OC's mindset, but you want him to give that OC free reign to take care of everything on the offensive side while he maintains the defensive side. And plus, I just feel like Raheem Morris would bring a certain defensive line coach with him to be his defensive coordinator. Wink, wink.
Hey, and you chose a defensive guy who has some history on the offensive side of the ball as well. So going back to like a Brandon Staley in for the Chargers, he's had a little bit of mixed reviews. I like the Staley mold personally, if we were to go a defensive option. So just an interesting one. But now that we're on the topic of defense, Reich, I guess we'll let you off the hook and go on to our next question here from RG.
Hey, fellas. This is RG from Baltimore. Just wanted to shoot you guys a question. What's the deal with Isaiah Rodgers and his lack of playing time? Thank you, guys.
Great question. A lot of people are scratching their heads after seeing the second straight week of Isaiah Rodgers not getting any snaps. Zero. Goose egg. Well, I'm not shocked. You know, I'm absolutely not shocked. Gus is not a guy that's going to run dime personnel too often. And Rodgers is the four corner. For some reason, Gus Bradley trusts Brandon Faison to be his other outside starting corner. So if you're not going to crack those top three corners, you're not going to play. It's pretty much is what it is. He's in nickel most of the time. And if he does take a linebackers off, extra linebackers off, his dime personnel, he's bringing in an extra safety when all safeties are healthy. So it's just not going to happen. I definitely think there should be a rotation going on with Rodgers getting some snaps outside and even inside. You know, Kenny hasn't been playing to the level where he can't come off the field at all at any given time. You know, give Rodgers some looks. He's a playmaker. He's a ball hawk. Just put him in and see how he can affect the game. Obviously, what you're sticking with is not working. So you have to switch things up. I definitely think Isaiah Rodgers deserves some playing time. And it's absolutely criminal that he hasn't had a chance to even get a snap to see what he can do in passing situations. Like, it's obviously you have to change something. And when you have a guy that's sitting on the bench that can affect the game in the ways that we saw Isaiah Rodgers do a countless amount of times at this point, you're not doing anything but hurting his development, in my opinion. And this was a crucial season for him. And hopefully he can salvage it. Maybe Gus Bradley recognizes that, you know, he made a mistake in the last couple of weeks and he turns over a new leaf and gives that man some playing time that he deserves.
Yeah, so Isaiah Rodgers has improved every single year. So to not put him on the field this year, honestly, is coaching malpractice. And I have a lot of things to share about Gus Bradley through 2 weeks, and I'm going to leave most of it for our last question. But to not have Isaiah Rodgers even on the field one snap is just completely negligent on coaching this team to its strengths. If we had three corners at all times that are just light years ahead of Rodgers and we had to have those guys on the field, all right, I understand. He's just buried in a deep room. That's not the case. I mean, Gilmore has struggled at times, but he's still been the best guy out there. Get that. Kenny Moore and Faison have gone through areas of just looking awful. And to me, you just have to get the best three guys on the field. If Kenny Moore is going to struggle on the underneath, which has been where he's struggled, he can't stick. He can't stay on those guys, and it's killing the Colts on third and shorts. And you just can't have this keep happening. So if it's a situation of that, maybe Kenny Moore slides to the outside where he's played a little bit, and Isaiah can go and play in the inside if they don't think he can play on the outside yet. But the big area, which is going to lead us into our next question to me, is Gus Bradley has to call more press coverage. You can't come in here with this same 15 yards off the line of scrimmage zone type crap and not have any press to mix in and force quarterbacks to beat it. And Isaiah Rodgers, in my opinion, has shown over the last couple of years to excel in press coverage.
Yeah, man. I mean, at this point, it's what are we talking about? I mean, we can analyze it, but we have to actually address what the real issue is. And let's just do that, you know, as far as with Gus Bradley. Our last question is a question from Landon. Shout out to Landon Oliver. His Twitter name is at Landon3MR. He said, seemed like Gus Bradley's scheme is more of the same with worse tackling principles. Do you think he adjusts, or is this more of the same?
I mean, Landon, thanks for the question, first and foremost.
just thank him.
Thank you for allowing me to talk about Gus Bradley, but The first situation is the whole conversation about going to Gus Bradley was going to be that we were going to have this more aggressive mindset in the coverage schemes, whether it's a cover three, cover two, we get those differences, but it was going to be more dynamic use of zone. It was going to be a more aggressive approach to mixing in press coverages. And we haven't seen that. So like that has been my biggest concern, is that it's just been more of the same. I mean, similar to what he just said, more of the same in the situation where we're just going to let quarterbacks make mistakes. But the biggest issue is when guys like Shaquille Leonard aren't on the field, you're asking these linebackers to force these mistakes. And Zaire Franklin in the mic spot just seems out of position. You've seen it multiple times now in coverage. It's just not his skill set. Okereke is in a contract year, and he's really struggled in coverage as a linebacker, and they're not helping them at all. They're not acting as if your star player is out in the linebacker room. They're just calling things the same way and expecting the same result, and that just can't happen. Again, it's malpractice as a coaching staff. The worst tackling principles part of it, or do we think he adjusts? I just don't see a way that this game ended where, first of all, I don't think Reich and Co. are going to get fired after a game midseason. But I just can't imagine there was not another right off the flight conversation in Irsay's office. And I don't know how you can go from another fiery conversation with your boss and the keeper of your wallet in a sense without also deliberating and sending that down the lines of other guys that are failing at their jobs. So I think there will be adjustments because I think there has to be adjustments. This isn't just something fans are mad about. This is something, if you watch the game of football and know what you're looking for, it is obvious that Gus Bradley's scheme has been a failure through 2 weeks. 2 weeks is a small sample size, so I don't like to talk in absolutes that Gus Bradley is a 10-year and a higher has been a failure. But through 2 weeks, Gus Bradley's scheme as a whole has failed. Now it's time to improve it, and we better see adjustments.
The definition of evolution is the adapt or perish. The Colts have went traditional and old school just for far too long, man. They refuse to step out on the ledge and do anything innovative. They still have this run the ball mantra in a passing league. And now defensively, where people are adapting more too high coverages, as I alluded to earlier about the Fangio-type defense, we're moving a single high. We're already behind the eight ball. That defense, the cover three defense, is what these young quarterbacks are shredding nowadays. It's what Patrick Mahomes, it's what Josh Allen, it's what these guys are shredding. Patrick Mahomes against Gus Bradley last year dropped 41 points and 48 points, respectfully, in his two times that he's seen the Raiders. They shred these defenses, man. All of those off soft coverage underneath routes, they're going to throw those, man. They're going to complete 7, 8, 15, 10. They're going to dice you up. They're going to matriculate down the field, and they're going to score. They're going to score points. All while we're still trying to run the ball, you know, and control clock and have long drives that aren't really sustainable without explosive plays. The NFL has changed, man, and the Colts refuse to adapt. So if you're going to go with a guy like Gus Bradley, the hire's made now. Now we're in it. So you might as well accept it. You need premium players to make this scheme work. The players have to play elite. The pass rush, the front four, they have to get pressure. Starting with that. If you can't get pressure, the scheme is useless. The quarterback will nickel and dime his way down the field and will score, as we saw with Trevor Lawrence. Like I said earlier, 71% completion percentage. You know, the guy was 25 for 30. Like, that's ridiculous. We saw Gardner Minshew set completion percentage records. Trevor last year was over 70%. Like, it's something that has to change within this scheme. Like Destin said, a way to do that is affect timing. You know how you affect timing? You get up on the line of scrimmage and you disrupt their timing. You can't let these guys have free releases, move in open spaces. The Christian Kirk touchdown was disgusting. Kenny Moore was sitting off about 10. It was a third and four. He was sitting off about 7 to 8 yards. Christian Kirk, simple in-breaker, slant, catches the ball, turns upfield, gets in the end zone. Like, that's those type of things can't happen. You have to know situational football. You have to know awareness. It seems like none of this is being communicated. And it got to be a communication issue. I saw the quote that Kiefer had in his article about what Kenny Moore said about the scheme, and it's not even worth going down of, because we can easily point the finger, and that's what it looked like. It looked like a lot of finger pointing, but everybody needs to take a look in the mirror. Gus Bradley included. He preached, he said all the right things in the offseason. We're going to play physical. We're going to attack at the line of scrimmage. The defensive line is going to be an attack front. We're going to get up the field. We're going to get after the pass rush. We don't have any run responsibilities like that. The linebackers are going to fill in the run. Yeah, that sounds great. But it's absolutely been a failure up to this point. The defense is inexcusable. There's way too many talented players on this defense for this defense to be performing this way. Multiple Pro Bowlers at every level. Secondary, defensive line, linebacker, and none of them are playing like it. Outside of Grover Stewart, Quiddipay having one dominant series, Dio a couple of rushes it here and there sparingly. Bobby and Zaire had 11 and 10 tackles apiece. they did well in the run game. I must admit, aside from the long James Robinson touchdown run, they filled well in the run game, playing sideline to sideline. But you're abysmal in coverage. You dropped Kwity Paye-back. He had no idea what he was doing when you released him. That's a simulated pressure. I like seeing that. I actually like the fact that you mixed it up and decided to do that. But can you at least coach the guy up and let him know what his responsibility is in that situation? I just have so much frustration built up inside of me. And I just don't know where to direct it. But this defense is definitely not it, man. And if y'all don't do something before this mass murderer comes in here Sunday into Lucas Oil Stadium, it's gonna get ugly, man.
Should we put like wanted signs up in downtown Indianapolis before the game or after? Should we just get a head start, like before the kickoff, just so we don't have to like hit every single light pole after the game, and just to get some out there? Because I mean, the police in Indianapolis are going to need to get something going to be able to get just to find him afterwards. But I mean, for real, I mean, it would just be so Indianapolis Colts if you,
I know what you're about to say.
If you are, you, these first two games are as bad as they've been, and then Kansas City comes in and we find a way to beat Kansas City, a hot Kansas City team right now that's looked dang good through 2 weeks. It would just be so what the Colts have been over the last couple of years. And it would attempt to, and then you'd have people just like completely shutting their mouths about all the things they've said the first 2 weeks. But what I am going to say is I've been here and I've done that. And I'm not, I will not forget these first 2 weeks. I don't care if we go 10, we find a way to win 10 games now after this first 2 weeks. These first 2 weeks still happened, and there still needs to be things talked about and fixed, because these early season starts, it is no longer a situation of shoulda, coulda, woulda. You took every opportunity you could to not have this happen, and it still happened. These happened. I'm not getting over it, but I hope we improve from here.
And hopefully just mentally we're in a much better mind state when we come back to record in 2 days. You know, hopefully our spirit is better. We're able to focus on the upcoming game Sunday, because this is a crucial 3-game stretch, man, with Kansas City, Tennessee, and Denver on a short week after that coming in. The Colts need to win 2 of these next 3, at least in my opinion, to even, you know, want to be taken seriously again, because right now they're laughing stock of the league, man. I've talked to multiple people. I've even talked to a couple of coaches. I mentioned it earlier in the Stampede Blue chat. I talked to a coach, and they're laughing at us, man. It is what it is. They are laughing. We are a joke. We are a joke. And unless we do something to change that, it starts by looking in the mirror. If none of these guys want to hold each other, are themselves accountable, then it's on them. Right quick before we get out of here, Destin, over or under 325 passing yards for Patrick Mahomes on Sunday?
I'm gonna go over. I just haven't heard enough and feel comfortable enough to expect otherwise. I saw what Lawrence was able to do on the underneath, and I just can't imagine what Mahomes is going to do over the top.
Yeah, man. Got behind the enemy lines piece coming. When I was thinking about who I wanted to write about, I was like, I could just pick a name out that I had on this Chiefs offense that I could write about. But y'all, you guys will see who I chose. And it's definitely a reason for concern, as I stated in the article. And Destin, anything you want before we get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super pumped for my weekly piece that's going to be coming out every single Wednesday over at the Stampede Blue coming up, and just wanted to mention that as well, because I'm sure my piece is going to be better than Rashad's, and I just had to figure a way to end there. But I'll be covering week to week the Colts team needs, and you're going to see each position group going up and down the list throughout the season. And it's going to be a moving piece, and we're going to cover different position groups via what their impact in that game was. So it's going to be a fun one. I'm going to be able to cover just about the entire Colts team by the end of it. And I don't want to say what it's called yet, but
I was about to say sneak preview. Who's you writing about first? Who are you writing about first? Sneak preview. Give us something.
I mean, which position group stood out against the Jaguars? All of them.
All right, say offense or defense. Where are you going first?
I mean, I have a couple that I'm going to go. You're going to see one on the offense, and you're going to see one on the defense. So both are going to get covered this first week, but you're going to see that first ranking of where I feel the Colts team needs are right now heading into week 3 against Patrick Mahomes. And I may cry while writing this one.
Okay, man. Thank y'all for tuning in, man. This has been another episode of the Saddle Up Show with Shad and Destin. We will see y'all again Thursday.